From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour goes back to 1995, to when the last grocery store left downtown Rochester. That was in Midtown Plaza, and since then, almost 20 years, it seems that if you want to live downtown, you have to go a little farther and farther to pick up groceries. That's what makes this week's news so significant. On Friday, Hart's Local Grocers opens in the city of Rochester. Not a huge store, but a significant one for people who live nearby, and that is the start of our discussion about city living and downtown development. We're pleased to welcome a panel to talk about this issue, and by the way, we'd love to hear from you. Either you do live downtown in the city of Rochester. For our Finger Lakes folks, we'd love to hear from you as well, whether you want to live more in an urban or a rural setting. And we'd like you to join the program and share your thoughts on that. We're going to get to the phone number in a second, but let's welcome our guests. First, Glenn Kellogg, the president and founder of Hart's Local Grocers. Congratulations on an upcoming opening Friday.
Thanks very much, Evan.
It's good to talk to you in studio for the first time. Heidi Zimmermeyer is the president of Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. Heidi, nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
On the phone with us is Matt Haig, a city councilman who can talk to us about the city's perspective on this. Matt, nice to talk to you again.
Great to be here.
And our phone number, if you want to join the program, is toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in the city of Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Glenn, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Washington, D.C.
Okay, you see, so I don't know if you had to have a little, we're going to talk about your background, but you had to have a sense, though, of the history of downtown development. Obviously, you're going to perform a market analysis before you even decide whether you want to open something like this downtown. But 19 years since, what was it, Heidi, you said that left
the IGA.
The IGA was what left the Midtown. God, it's amazing. And so what for you, Glenn, convinced you that this could work in downtown?
Well, it was taking a look at the market. My background really is in city planning and specifically doing urban economics, taking a look at markets in urban areas. And when I saw Rochester, I sort of looked around and said, are you kidding me? There's no reason that a lot of services shouldn't be doing well here.
Okay. And Hart's Local Grocers, which opens Friday, is located where?
It's on Winthrop Street, which is behind the Little Theater, and next to Two Vine.
Okay. Between the Little and Two Vine, and that's in an area that, Heidi, I imagine that's a sweet spot in terms of a track record of successful residents. There's business doing well. It's a district. The East End District seems to be kind of on the money for a place like that.
It is, and it's been kind of the hottest in terms of 360-degree development because there's office uses there. You've got the Little Theater there. You've got restaurants. You've got bars. You've got condos. You've got apartments. It's been a really interesting blend of kind of uses downtown, and it's really been one of the hottest neighborhoods in terms of the 12 or 13 that we track down here. That one's been big.
Why have we seen such a stagnant opportunity when it comes to just buying groceries for people who want to live in the city? What's been going on?
I think it's a couple things. I think, number one, you've got a situation where retail follows rooftops. So the question is, what is that tipping point for downtowns like ours? And when you talk to retail experts, national retail experts, they'll tell you that when your downtown gets between 5 and 10,000 residents, retailers start to get interested. And right on schedule, when Glenn came into the community, we were at about 5,000. We're now over 6, and we've got another 2,000 moving in with the projects that are in the pipeline now. When projects open down here, they tend to fill very quickly, and the vacancy rates are quite low. So there's clearly a pent-up demand, and when you have the Larry Glazers of the world and Bob Morgan saying, boy, we can do another 4,000 or 5,000 people down here, then you know that you've got something to work with. Plus, the national demographic shifts are pushing a lot of people back into cities and into downtowns. As the centrifugal development pattern we've seen for the last 50 or 60 years is turning centripetal and beginning to move back in. So all of that, Rochester's definitely on that track, like a lot of other mid-sized cities, and we're seeing that down here.
Okay, so that was part of what I was sort of researching this morning and wanted to ask about in terms of we saw for years a flight to the suburbs in many ways, especially the trend of young professionals may be urban, but you often see families move out to the suburbs. Then maybe the empty nesters come back and maybe they don't. Rochester is following a national trend, Heidi, that is, or part of a national trend, I should say?
It is very much so, and we're seeing it throughout New York State, but we're seeing it in all 50 states. And one of the things that's worth talking about is what's happening demographically in the United States. Over the next two decades, demographers are telling us that more than 80% of the new households formed in this country will be one- to two-person households. That's kind of the prime demographic for an urban lifestyle. Millennials, and those are people born roughly between the 1970s and the year 2000, is the biggest population bubble in 50 years, and that's got to be understood. And when you survey those folks, 77% of them plan to live in America's urban cores. So they're driving part of this. And then of the 101 million households that will take shape by 2025, 88% of them are projected to be childless. And that's compared to 52% in 1970. So
wow.
Our households are looking different in this country. We've got more people in smaller households with fewer kids per household. And so you're dealing with a very different demographic. And that's really what we're talking about with the downtown resident profile, empty nesters, DINKs, which are double income, no kids, young professionals, artists, students, wealthy retirees. And boy, we're seeing that in spades in Rochester. So we kind of leapt over the SoHo model, which happened down in New York City, where the whole market cut its teeth with artists and students. And it took a while for the rest of the market to catch on. We have that. But our wealthy retirees just leapfrogged right over that and began moving in. And so part of that is the East End story. And all of that kind of spread out. We've now got 13 very distinct neighborhoods down here, and they all have now housing. It's fascinating to watch what's happened.
You use the term DINKs, double income, no
DINKs.
Kids.
Yeah.
But for a while, I had read that if you weren't DINKs, in other words, if you had kids, then you weren't going to live in a city. Is that something that is starting to change?
I think you can't separate out downtown from the rest of the city of Rochester. And the city of Rochester, in the sense of kids, because we have a lot of families that live in the city. We all know that the school system needs a tremendous amount of work. It's in many regards, people have suggested it's failing. But on the other hand, I would suggest to you that why you don't see families downtown has as much to do with the lack of yards as it does the school system, ironically. And so I do think that the profile down here is likely not to be families with kids. And you're more likely to see singles and couples and people who are living together but not romantically connected, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, and that has implications for how you design your units, too.
And before I turn to Glenn and our city councilman, Matt Haig, who's on the phone with us, how important are the empty nesters as part of this equation, Heidi?
Huge.
Yeah?
I think huge. And also, think about the population bubble and how many baby boomers there are. And that's a huge, huge number, not only in this region but nationwide. So if that particular demographic is interested, more of them, in an urban-type lifestyle like what downtowns offer, that has huge, huge implications for decades over who's going to be moving in and how full your units are going to be and, by the way, how you want to build them.
Hearts Local Grocers opens on Friday. That's the peg for our discussion about downtown living, downtown development, and what's happening there. And Glenn Kellogg is here, the president and founder of Hearts Local Grocers. What did you need from the city to make this happen, Glenn?
Well, the city has been generous in providing access to community development block grant money. They've also been a huge partner in facilitating the development process, in getting inspections timely, and moving the regulatory side of things forward for us.
Matt Haig, city councilman, and by the way, I just saw our phones all of a sudden light up, and we're going to get to calls in a moment. We've already had some online comments and questions about Hearts specifically, which we'll get to, more comments about city living and downtown living as well. Councilman Haig, when you look at individual projects or proposed projects, what are the criteria that have to stand out to you before you think we ought to the city wants to be a partner in a project or help clear the way for a project like Hearts?
Yeah, I think for me, it focuses on a few things. One, how it's going to provide jobs for our local residents, how it will affect and impact the surrounding neighborhood, and how it ultimately fits into what we'd like to see in our neighborhoods and our city. And you know, I can't think of a better example than a grocer, especially one that's going to be locally owned and operated, focusing on locally marketed and raised products than Hearts. I mean, that really is a terrific example. I believe they're going to be hiring more than 65 people to work at the store. I think it anchors a strong neighborhood, but further makes it a place that's desirable for people to move to and to visit. And it really provides an amenity far beyond just the few blocks that that surround it. And that's important. And I think when you combine all of those things, it's just a great example of why it's important for government and private enterprise to partner, because we all want to we all have different goals to achieve. But at the end of the day, when they can converge on a project like this, it's the exact same, it's the exact thing that I look forward to supporting.
And Councilman, Heidi said a bit earlier that now you've got distinct downtown neighborhoods, you've got really developing parts of the city. So when you look outside of, say, the East End, are there other areas that are ripe for grocery stores, you know, that that will make people feel like the amenities that they want are going to be there if they want to consider living there?
Yeah, I think this is important, and this whole concept of food deserts that, that we as a city and really as many urban and rural areas in the country face, the opportunity to fresh produce, fresh groceries in a consistent way is a huge one. And so I think there are other parts of the city that are ready for this type of development. You know, I know Council Member Dana Miller has been looking for years in the 19th Ward for this type of opportunity. And I think as that neighborhood, which has always been a very strong, stable, middle-class neighborhood, I think as it sees it continue to evolve with the development along the Plymouth and Exchange area and other parts of the 19th Ward, I think it's another area that a grocer could find interesting. And you know, I'd want to comment on something about that. Part of the challenge has been for a number of years for cities like Rochester and elsewhere has been that most grocery stores have shifted to a suburban model, which are very large stores that need large surface parking lots, need a lot of square footage. And that works in the suburbs. But it's not a model that necessarily works in urban areas because we don't have that square footage, we don't have that level of parking, and nor can we provide it. And so it's been innovative businesses like Hearts that and others like them who have said, you know, there's a different model that can be successful in urban markets. And I think as somebody like them who are sort of taking this first step, I think others will follow. And I think that's we're at an exciting point for so many reasons in this city.
We had a caller, our first caller of the hour, didn't want to be on air, just wanted to ask a question. And our engineer, Dave Campo, sends me a note saying that the caller talked about parking and says, parking at the Little and around there can be bad. Is there anything that can be done about it for Hearts and in that area? Glenn?
So we own the parking lot in between our building and Two Vine that's used for parking for the Little Theater as mm-hmm. well. And I think that things can get difficult to park there, even just with the Little. But going forward, I think we're going to be okay. Our peak hours are really going to be probably between 4 and 7. And this is an early town, so I think we might really be looking at 3 to 6:30, which would work out perfectly because parking really starts to get tight. I've been noticing this working at the building recently, that parking really starts to fill up for the Little 6:30 for their first shows. So I think we're going to be okay. Yeah, parking in the 6 o'clock, late 6 o'clock hour is going to be tight, but I think we're going to be okay having our rush for groceries come right before the movies.
Okay, and bottom line is people will get to understand the rhythm of that area, and as long as there isn't too much overlap in the busy period, you expect to be okay there.
We do.
Okay. Now, Heidi brought up the point that, you know, in many ways, you're not going to see too many families targeted for downtown. That's just not overly realistic. And in that sense, that brings up an interesting question, because throughout this morning I've been asking people, what would it take to convince you to move to the city, or especially move to downtown? And I hear a lot about, are there good local grocery stores? Is there good parking in the area? A lot of people talk about parking. I'm not talking about just for Hearts. And a lot of people bring up schools, and I think, you know, especially for people who have families. But if Heidi's point is correct, it makes me think schools, even though Rochester's district is struggling, it doesn't matter as much in this case. Is that correct, Heidi?
I'd say that schools are fairly irrelevant to whether or not most of the population that we see downtown is going to be here or not. And that's fortunate for us because there's a whole, you know, movement in the community to try and improve the city school system, which, you know, is worthy of that. So I think in terms of downtown growth, and the irony is that we can talk about what should or shouldn't happen, but what I can tell you is that regardless of what is happening, people are continuing to move downtown in droves. And just to give you an example, between the year 2000 and 2010 in the census, the county grew its population by about 1.2%. The city of Rochester lost about 4.5%. And downtown grew by 11.5%, which puts it on par with Webster and Victor in terms of population growth.
Pat on Twitter asks, I might have missed it. Can you offer a definition of downtown versus city?
Excellent. I think that's an excellent question. The way the market seems to be defining downtown, it used to be everything within the inner loop. And now the way the market seems to have sort of blown out over the inner loop is to pick up High Falls, to pick up part of Cornhill, and then it's blown out where the inner loop is now going to be filled in. The Alexander Park, where the old Genesee Hospital site was, that area is now called Alexander Park, and that's part of downtown. And then what used to be called the Upper East End, which is a bar district, is now being rebranded part of the East End. And so all of that up to East Avenue and Alexander and a little bit beyond toward a couple blocks toward University is now considered part of, quote, downtown, as opposed to the rest of the city, which has neighborhoods like Park Avenue and Neighborhood of the Arts and South Wedge and Market View Heights and all of that, all part of the city but not part of downtown.
Yeah, and to clarify, I'm not saying that schools don't matter. I'm saying that if you want downtown living, it's largely going to be people who don't have children, and in this case, a weak school system is not going to hurt you as much. And in that way, maybe continued successful districts in downtown, as downtown continues to thrive, maybe that eventually has a ripple effect that can get to the schools. Maybe I'm being optimistic, Heidi, but...
Well, insofar as the tax base grows, that will improve a lot of features that will make a difference. But in the end, you've got to go back to neighborhoods that are high poverty and try and begin to find ways to create a better quality of life and much better connections with schools and the neighborhoods and what people need, what the market wants, and then work on a child-by-child basis to keep them in school.
Yeah. Before I let Councilman Haig go, because he's certainly a busy guy, and I appreciate Councilman Matt Haig joining us from the city of Rochester by phone today. Councilman, when you look at that difference of downtown versus city, I don't say versus in any sort of conflict. I mean, downtown and then city as sort of separated entities, and we talk about schools mattering less for this issue of downtown thriving. Is that difficult as a city councilman at times to sort of separate out what's good for downtown, what do we need to invest in, what has a return on investment versus how are we going to help poverty, how are we going to make sure the schools thrive?
Yeah, it's probably one of the more difficult debates and dialogues that we have as a community. And I think one of the most important things that we need to do is to understand as a community that the success of our urban core and our downtown directly relates to the strength of our neighborhoods, and the strength of our neighborhoods directly relates to the strength of our downtown. You know, you don't see many successful cities across this country that do not have a successful and thriving urban core. There's very few that do not have, it just doesn't happen. And so the success of our downtown, as Heidi described it and defined it, and I think that is exactly what I view as downtown these days, I think that's important. That needs to be strong in order for our neighborhoods to be strong. If you look at what Heidi described geographically, some of that touches on some of our toughest neighborhoods in terms of high rates of poverty and crime, especially as it relates to childhood poverty, joblessness, unemployment. If we can continue to strengthen our urban core, I think it has a direct correlation on strengthening some of our weakest neighborhoods. And it's not an either or. I think it's you just make significant and smart choices along the way, and you have to look at both, and you just try to make the right choices. But it is a very difficult debate, and I know at times a lot of the folks in the neighborhood get concerned that we focus a lot of time and attention on our urban core. But as Heidi described it, our urban core is now one of our fastest growing neighborhoods. And as I firmly believe, you cannot have a strong city, no matter how strong some of your neighborhoods are, if its center city, its downtown, however you'd like to describe it, isn't thriving and healthy. Because it is a catalyst for jobs, it's a catalyst for investment, and it's a catalyst to grow that tax base, which helps us do so many more things for all of our citizens.
A couple questions online before we let the councilman go here. Mark wants to know, can the city invest in downtown while keeping taxes in check? Councilman, what do you say about that?
I think we have to, and I think, you know, frankly, over the last, you know, at least 5 years that I've been involved in government, we have done a pretty good job of either not increasing taxes, increasing them modestly, or in, I think, one or two instances, if my memory serves correct, we've actually cut taxes. It's a balancing act. And I think as you look at that, you have to look at it as a business. You know, if a business doesn't continue to invest in its product, in its, you know, bricks and mortar, it's a business that's probably not going to be healthy in the long term. City's no different. We have to invest in our infrastructure. We have to invest in our people. We have to invest in our community. And our center city is one of those. And, you know, organizations like Hearts and others that are looking to invest in our city, we've got to, you know, you have to ask tough, critical questions of what it is they want to do and how they want to do it. But at the end of the day, if it's going to create jobs, if it's going to strengthen our neighborhoods and grow our tax base, it's something that we should partner with business to do.
And here's Timothy on Twitter with a question I'd like all of our panel to address. He says, does filling the inner loop affect Hearts and that neighborhood? And I should mention that my understanding from city engineers is we got to be careful when we talk about it. We're filling about a third of the inner loop. It's not the entire inner loop. I think we're going to get moving with that starting this fall if we're still on track. And let me start with Glenn from Hearts. I'm sure you've been following that part of the story as well. Does that impact you?
Oh, it will impact us, and in a good way. One of the things that I was really worried about in looking at a downtown location for this store was what I've been referring to as the moat. The inner loop moat. That even though there's a growing and strong demographic inside of the inner loop that we expect to capture, we still need to capture sales from the Park Avenue neighborhood and University Neighborhood of the Arts and some of those close-in neighborhoods. And right now, I think there's a perception gap that the Park Avenue neighborhood ends at the inner loop. And I think when that goes away, that there will be more identification between downtown and the neighborhoods, which I think for us is a great thing, that we want to be a neighborhood center, not just for downtown, but all of those close-in neighborhoods. I think that's going to be wonderful for us.
Heidi, what's your take, and what is Rochester Downtown Development Corporation's take on that project?
First of all, it's been at the top of our list for probably 15 or 20 years. When that thing was built back in the late 50s, it literally ripped apart neighborhoods. Everywhere where it built, it cut through a huge trench, 12 lanes wide in the case of the section that's being filled in and a large portion of it. And this, piece by piece, will allow us to re-knit the fabric of the city in that part of the community. The difficult part, as I understand it, with the northern edge, you know, that northern part of the inner loop, is that it's far more heavily traveled. And so it really does function as an internal highway to the city. And so that's why the engineers have recommended that that part of it not be filled in, although a lot of us wish it would be. But so I think the southern portion of it is going to make a huge difference in helping to reconnect neighborhoods, and that includes the whole that goes all the way up to Main Street.
Yeah.
And so all of those neighborhoods now will be much more, that fabric will be recreated the way it once was.
I've got some friends and colleagues who even said, oh boy, I'm a little sore about this. I enjoy that. I always say I love using the inner loop because no one's ever on it. And that's part of why the decision was made. Now, please don't call and tell me how wrong I am because you use it. I know occasionally it can get congested, but they've studied it. And the study shows it is not used in the same way. And so, Councilman, I'll give you the last word on that inner loop project. Are you excited about it, or did you fight it?
You know, there are fewer projects in the city right now and in my term of office that I am more excited about than filling in that section of the inner loop. the transformation that I think that will have is something that I think for most of us is hard to appreciate or understand now. But when you go to other cities across this country that have had similar moats or castle walls or whatever that are basically been created by 1950s, 1960s era highway construction, when they have disappeared, you know, unfortunately, San Francisco lost theirs during an earthquake, but they removed the double-decker highway along the San Francisco Bay. That area is now one of the most thriving portions of the city of San Francisco. There's areas in other cities that have had these filled in or dropped down and turned into these wide boulevards. The traffic has not become problematic. The development around it has exploded. And there's a side benefit here to go to that parking issue. The cities and the neighborhoods have become incredibly more walkable. And people who didn't think that it was possible to walk from East and Alexander to downtown because of a highway in their way now find, gee, that's just a short 2 or 3 block walk. Or from the Park Avenue neighborhood, oh, it's just a 20-minute walk, and I'm not going over a highway. The potential that this project has for our city and the growth and the stitching together of these neighborhoods that Heidi described as being ripped apart is what really will have, I think, a decades-long impact in the positive for our city.
Councilman Matt Haig, Councilman, always nice to catch up with you. I'm going to let you go as we head to break, and I'm sure we will see you in studio soon enough.
I hope so, and thanks so much for having me today.
Thanks, Matt.
All right.
We're going to head to break. We're going to come right back after the shortest break in radio. We're going to tell you about a story that was in the New York Times recently that has some very interesting trend lines. We're going to ask Heidi if she thinks Rochester is going to be in line with what the New York Times is reporting. And we've had some questions about what is HART specifically all about. So we're going to dive into the grocery store itself and the approach they're choosing to take as HART gets ready to open on Friday. That's the News Peg as we talk to Glenn Kellogg, the president and founder of HART's Local Grocers, opening between the Little Theater and Tuvine on this Friday, and Heidi Zimmermeyer, the president of Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. We'll get back to the phones as well with you and your comments online as well. I'm Evan Dawson, and you're listening to member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, the loss of Robin Williams. We review the actor's career with Jack Garner and Mike DiGiorgio. And we'll talk about suicide prevention. Many are asking today, what could have been done or said to prevent this tragedy? There might not be a good answer, but we'll explore what we all can do to help those in need. That's coming up next hour on Connections.
You make your name for yourself with a smash hit burger place, Umami Burger it's called. Maybe you've heard of it. So now what? Why? Chocolate fried chicken, of course.
But it's really just an elevated version of fried chicken, like a new spin on it, a new recipe that gives it a different flavor than people are used to.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, a tasting. Next time on Marketplace, it's from 8 p.m.
This evening at 6:30.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're going to go to the phones, and you can join the conversation on living downtown. What would it take to convince you to live downtown? Maybe you do live downtown. And what are the amenities that are on the top of your list? We're talking about the opening of a grocery store on Friday. HART's Local Grocers opens on Friday, and our panel talking about that. The phone number to call, 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255. That's toll free. Or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. This is Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes, hi. A couple things. One is, I think it's interesting to listen to the language, which is not really new language, but language in describing the downtown development. There's no question that language indicates that it's primarily directed toward the recent development in the last 10 or so years, is really targeted for people who can afford a much higher rent. And even the expansion of the downtown definition implies that. Basically, you know, what has been in existence prior is 3 or 4 places for the poor and the old to live. But most people who live in Rochester now in low-income areas and even in some of the middle-class income areas cannot afford, if they want to retire downtown, couldn't afford most of their rents downtown unless they they're kind of delegated to these places that we, you know, pretty much know that's where those people live. So I find it interesting that in a time when we talk about concentrated poverty, that evidently the way the capitalist system wants to work is that only applies when we're not talking about places where we need to get a lot of money, i.e. downtown. The second point I want to make is that I wish the councilman was still on the line, is that, you know, the inference is that we're going to help the neighborhoods do their, you know, thing and be able to have better quality. Well, there's an issue that's on the table right now that I wish you, I could share with people, and hopefully councilman would respond at a later time, is that right now the money that the federal government gives to communities, urban areas, to help revitalize and rehab their homes in the neighborhoods. And unfortunately, that money was cut tremendously from the federal level. But right now, the council and the mayor are deciding how to disperse that money. And the past way has been like every quadrant gets an equal amount. Well, in the last election, in candidates' nights in which the mayor and the council member was there, they made a commitment that if elected, when these monies came up, that they would proportion them at a higher level to the Northeast, which is one of probably the highest area of concentrated poverty in the city. So I want to know if that's really going to happen, if indeed the money is going to be distributed in a more equitable way.
All right, and
which means somebody has to get less. So that was a commitment made. I heard it. I was there. Others heard it. And I want to know, and I wish the council was still there, and maybe you could have them come back and talk about this. But this is a critical issue. Rehabbing houses in neighborhoods is a huge problem.
All right, Bonnie. Now let me jump in and say, first of all, I think that second point is definitely one that we need to talk with city officials on, and you're right. We'll try to address that on a future date when Matt is back, or the mayor is going to be here 8 days from now. We'll talk to Mayor Lovely Warren, and I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk about many, many issues when the mayor is on this program next week. I want to go back to your first point, and I'll start with Heidi. I know you've heard this kind of discussion before. Is this simply a case where you have to make priority choices and say, we want downtown to thrive, and you know, not everybody can afford everything, or is there, you know, what's your take on what Bonnie is saying?
I think your points are very well taken, and I think it's such a complex environment. There are a couple things that I would tease out of your comments and questions that I think are worth talking about. The first thing to note is that since about 1970, the city of Rochester has lost a huge portion of what it once had in terms of middle-income families and people. They just left. And that's part of what's changed in neighborhoods and in the school system and the like. So part of what's happening with the downtown area is that people are moving back into the city from the suburbs and beginning to populate the city again. And that the number, the percentage of low-income people, for example, within the city limits is very high. And so if we're talking about the tax base, if we're talking about pumping money into city coffers with development and the like, it's important to balance all of this. So that's point one. Point two is that in the downtown area, when we started this, 60% of the units down here were subsidized / affordable, 60%. And that number is now down to about 34%, not because units are removed, but because so many market rate and luxury units have been built. But the third point is that a number of the projects are what are known as 80-20 or something similar to that, where a portion of the units are affordable. And so the projects are more blended. And I think that's true for any larger scale project that's being built today because of the tax credits and the like, that you need to design your projects that way. The other thing that's worth mentioning in all this is that because of the diverse housing stock downtown, because you have so much by way of subsidized and affordable and luxury and in the middle and more lower sort of working, they're sort of working family type pricing for, you know, your first-time teachers and paralegals and people of that kind, bank tellers, that slice of the economy. There are now units for the first time that are filling that need as well. That downtown is turning out to be the most diverse area in the city. And so that has value too, because downtown belongs to everyone. So that, and when you combine that with the level of private investment, when you look at the whole tax base downtown, the fact that it's gone up probably $20 million is the latest figure that I have in the last year, is worth something to the entire city. So it's got to be a balance of everything. And you're right, we have neighborhoods that far too long have not had the kind of attention in terms of resources and many other things, investment and the like. We need to turn that ship around. And the mayor that we have now was voted in on that platform. So we're hoping to see much more of that.
844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 to join the program. Glenn Kellogg, president and founder of Hart's Local Grocers. You've worked in urban planning. What's your take on what Bonnie is saying?
I think she's right that it's important to have mixed communities where everybody has an opportunity to find housing and amenities for them. It's, you know, from the grocery store perspective, while we're paying really good wages, a lot of our people probably can't afford to live in some of the new apartments in downtown. If you want service workers living close to provide those things, you need mixed income housing. But at the same time, it does need to be mixed. That as we were just saying, we need to not discourage new development with higher end housing.
I want to turn to a story that we saw in the New York Times just a couple of months ago, and the headline says, "Suburbs trying to hold on to young adults as exodus to cities appears to grow." And what they found was they looked at Manhattan, and they found that Westchester, Nassau, and Suffolk were actually sort of clawing to hold on to what used to be an easy population of people for them, which was 30 to 44. The New York Times reports that, on average, young professionals are waiting longer to start families. So it's not just 25-year-olds who have families and all of a sudden they want to get out of downtown or they want to get out of Manhattan there. And so the Times found that Westchester, Nassau, and Suffolk were worried about losing the rather affluent or successful or dinks 25 to 44 years old. And that boded well for downtown, maybe less well for the suburbs. Are we seeing that kind of development here, Heidi?
We definitely are. And we talked earlier about demographic shifts. And I think what you're talking about are millennials. And interestingly, other articles in the Times and other national publications have recently been talking about the census and how for the first time we're seeing in some of our largest cities in this country, the city populations are growing faster than their surrounding suburbs. And we haven't seen that for 60-plus years in this country. So I think when we talk about the centrifugal versus centripetal growth pattern in the United States, I think we're beginning to see that tip for the first time in our lifetimes. And so it's new and it's different and everyone's been scrambling to figure out what it means. There's a lot written in the urban planning field now about the emptying out of the suburbs and our people. Is the next issue in this century going to be that we now see vacancies and vacant homes in suburban cul-de-sacs where we've never seen that in our lifetimes? And so people are trying to understand what the demographic shifts mean, what the sort of pop culture is driving. And we're certainly seeing that sort of pattern here in Rochester.
All right, we've had some questions on social media just about what Hart's is planning. And so let's get specific about, first of all, how big of a store will Hart's Local Grocers be when it opens on Friday?
So we've got 20,000 square feet. 3,000 square feet of that is our office space upstairs. And then we've got about 18,000 square feet on the floor. We've got a little bit of backroom space and a big kitchen, leaving us around 15,000 square feet of floor space. So it's not your suburban size 40 to 100,000 square foot store, obviously, but we're big enough to have every department and satisfy our shoppers' weekly needs.
What is the model or the mission, I should say, of Hart's?
Wow. Okay, let's see. Our mission is to build community, delight the senses, and connect Rochesterians to the region's greatest food. And I think we're going to live up to all of those. We're trying to help build a walkable downtown and a walkable neighborhood in the East End, someplace that you don't always have to drive to get your groceries, that for the 2,500 residents in walking distance to us, you may drive
or Glenn,
less frequently.
Or Glenn, last Wednesday on this program, because I know you were listening then, you heard the show about bicycling, and I have never had a show, maybe a couple this year, where all five lines were lit up the entire hour. Bicycling was a huge topic for people, and I think more people want to do it, and this kind of thing probably makes that more possible.
So we are really proud. I hope Eric Frisch will forgive me for saying
Eric
this.
Yeah, he was on the show.
So we're going to be having, I think, the first on-street bicycle parking in the city. We're also going to have bicycle parking in our lot, but instead of where we used to have a curb cut coming into the auto shop, instead of adding a parking space, that'll be bicycle parking.
He's mentioning Eric Frisch, who is a transportation specialist for the city of Rochester. And when Eric was on last week, along with others, that was one of the questions is, if I'm going to do this, where do I put my bike and can it be safe? You're saying you're going to offer... You're targeting specifically people on bicycle.
We've seen the trends, and I don't know if you've noticed through the efforts of Eric Frisch and Jim McIntosh, the bike lanes they've put in, so many more people are riding bikes in the city. We think, and a lot of millennials prefer to get around town on their bicycles. We're going to try to make it very convenient for them to pedal to us and take their groceries home on their bike.
Yeah, and we talked about the fact that the city is working on, I think they call it Bicycle Boulevard, the Bicycle Boulevard Project. Portland has seen a surge in that in the last 10 to 20 years, and Rochester is aiming for that in the next 6 to 12 months. Eric Frisch thinks that a year from now we'll be able to talk about a lot of city neighborhoods that have more either lane designations, more signage, more of a welcoming sort of an atmosphere for people who want to be on a bicycle but maybe don't want to be on the busiest streets. Heidi, you're nodding right along with that. I imagine Rochester Downtown Development has been tracking that trend.
You bet. And we're seeing this all over. I have to tell you, even when you look at people that are now in their teens and 20s, the number of people getting driver's licenses has dropped significantly. What I'm reading is that there are almost a quarter of that population does not have a driver's license, including one of my three kids, by the way. And so there's no question that this next generation is not as car-focused as the generations that preceded it. And that, plus a very, very enlivened and excited bicycle lobby nationwide, but definitely here in Rochester, is changing everybody's thinking.
Isn't that amazing? I hear that kids are turning 16 and not immediately rushing for a license. I mean, all I have is my own experience that I was going away to work at Lake Chautauqua for the summer, and I had one shot at a driving test. And I don't use this word often, but my instructor was evil. I was essentially conned into failing it. I'm not going to give you all the details, but I contained myself, didn't get the license for the summer, and I thought that was the end of the world. Now I've got a 2-year-old and our babysitter from up the street, 18, not really feeling all that much of an urgency. I think turning 18, she's starting to feel like, yeah, maybe now. I couldn't even relate to that, but that really is happening.
Huh? It's changing.
That's really amazing stuff. A little bit more about Hearts. What about prepared foods? And what about your relationship with farms? You talk about wanting to have the best local food, but local, like a lot of things, like the word sustainable and sometimes, like the word organic, is a little bit nebulous and can be viewed as sort of a marketing catchphrase, or it can be a real part of a business's ethos. What does local mean?
Wow, what does local mean? We haven't set a firm line in the sand for where we're accepting food from.
Yep.
But we are working with very local Rochester businesses. We're working for our produce, dealing with farms, with Headwater Foods. That's the company that you may know Good Food Collective through. They're assembling a regional food hub for the Rochester region, collecting fruits and vegetables from small farms and wholesaling it to places like us. So we're working with them. We also have a list of other local farms that we're working with for our meats and cheeses. We also have a lot of Rochester brands that we're trying to get on our shelves. Local stores, local bakeries that... And when I say local, I really mean Rochester and the Rochester suburbs that will be supplying us.
And what about prepared foods? It can be popular at Wegmans.
And prepared foods, I'm really proud of our chef. He's, I think, going to raise the bar for grocery food for the service line, we have amazing stuff coming out of the kitchen. Come in and try our breakfast sandwiches and our lunch sandwiches, which I think are going to be a hit for downtown. We're just a couple blocks away, and I think we're going to have delicious things there. Then we're also going to have a great line of things that you can take home and serve to the family.
Glenn Kellogg is here from Hart's Local Markets, a new grocery store that opens Friday. It's located between the Little Theater and Tuvine. And Heidi Zimmermeyer is here, the president of Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. This is Rich in Rochester. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I've been listening to the conversation. The thing that it's a good conversation, but the one that concerns me is we're talking about gentrification, and in this conversation, I haven't heard anybody speak to the issues of the lack of the people already placed in the city, the poorer folks and stuff like that. The problems with banks moving out of many parts of the city and parts that they don't find, I guess, profitable enough. Wegmans totally abandoning the city, which has led me to boycott them for the last 15 years. I don't hear any of you speaking to that. All you're talking about is gentrification, but even the guy talking about his sandwiches and stuff, I don't hear anybody talking about how do we bring these other people along. And that's a real concern of mine, because I think you will end up with the serious situation like you have in New York, where you're running out the indigenous people or people who have been in the cities for generations because they can't afford to live in those cities anymore.
All right, Rich, thanks for the call. Let's let Heidi jump in there. Go ahead, Heidi.
Yeah, the issue of gentrification is huge, and there's no question in so many cities. This is one of the first things that people like Glenn and myself, who have a background in urban planning, the first thing you start to get concerned about when you see investment coming into areas that have not seen that kind of investment within city limits. The irony of downtown is that so many of the buildings, literally 31 buildings since the year 2000, were not housing. They were empty commercial buildings, are now filled with people. And so in that sense, they're actually taking part of the tax base and driving value and vibrancy into it. And so in that sense, it's not the same as what you and I are both worried about, which is this question of you have invaders that come into a neighborhood and all of a sudden you get house after house or building after building. The rents go up. You know, there's a lot of money invested. People who can't afford the rents get shoved out by other people who have more money. And it creates a whole turnover in population. And by the way, look at Brooklyn if you want to see that happening. That's happening literally as we're sitting here. And I don't know where people are getting shoved to in some of the areas of Brooklyn right now. And in Rochester, our particular situation is more that we've had such disinvestment in the city, and we have neighborhoods that have long-time residents that need an incredible amount of investment and help just to bring basic services, safety, and livable environments to people. And so that, I think, is where, as a community, we've got to be focused very heavily. What's happening downtown is driving money and investment back into the city limits, hopefully. With the rise in property values, it's going to create more funds for the city administration to be able to work with in other neighborhoods. That's our hope in any case. But I agree with you. If we can't focus on all of this, then we're throwing baby out with bathwater, and we can't do that.
And you know what? I mentioned the breakfast sandwiches that I'm excited about. But at the same time, I also want to assure you that we're not going to be a high-end, expensive grocery store. That we understand, we have a really diverse population to serve. We have the people, the retirees who are living in expensive condos, and we also have other less affluent urban residents who will be shopping with us. And aside from having the natural and organic products, we're also going to have the top-selling national brands that that everyone comes to expect. That we're really going to try to serve. We're going to try to be everything to everyone on this, and I think you'll be really impressed with the prices when you come in.
All right, Glenn, you've got 3 days left. What isn't done yet? Could you open tomorrow if you had to?
Could we open tomorrow if we had to? My chef would never let me say yes.
Okay,
but we're really close. We're picking up the dust, connecting the last things in the store. We've got a couple more shelves to fill, but we're training 60 employees in the store right now. They should be ready to, operate the tills and serve up great tasting food to everyone.
What time do you open Friday morning? What time?
10 a.m. Come join us.
10 a.m. Friday morning at Hart's. Thank you for coming in, Glenn.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you here, Glenn Kellogg from Hart's Local Grocers. And Heidi, I appreciate the point that you made, Heidi Zimmermeyer of Rochester Downtown Development, which is that I am absolutely sensitive as the host of this program, and I know you are in your role with Rochester Downtown Development, to make sure it isn't all about 100% investment and never thinking about the people who've been here for decades, people who are struggling with poverty. And I think we've covered that often on this program, but we will continue to do that. I really take to heart the point you make that a lot of this is development. You're filling a lot of empty space, and we're going to have more space to fill when we fill in part of the inner loop. And so this isn't just trying to displace people. It's trying to regrow something. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time, and I'll see you back here shortly, we hope.
Thanks.
All right. Short break. And coming back and trying to learn from the loss of a legend, Robin Williams, yesterday. Stay with us on Connections.